from the February 15th, 2021 issue of Us Weekly. That concludes today's readings from Us Weekly. This has been Lydia Coppell for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American's Business and Oil and Lifestyle sections, followed by Far West Texas News at 7.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Need help? Know someone who does? If you or someone you care about are feeling overwhelmed with emotions like sadness, depression, or anxiety, or you feel like you want to harm yourself or others, call 911. Call the Disaster Distress Helpline at 800-985-5900 or call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233. Starting Monday on the noon book hour, a selection from our Western section, Under the Sweetwater Rim by Louis L'Amour. Deep in Indian country, Major Mark Devereaux and his men find a grisly scene. A wagon train savagely attacked with no survivors. One of the wagons originally with the group is missing. In it is a fortune in gold and Devereaux's daughter, Mary. The slaughter, Devereaux learns, was not the work of Indians, but of a murderous outlaw band. With the stakes rising in a deadly game, the only wild card is Lieutenant Tenador Bryan, who is riding with the missing wagon, against orders. Devereaux knows Bryan is a good soldier, but is he good enough to protect a saddlebag full of gold and the life of his daughter? Under the Sweetwater Rim by Louis L'Amour, starting Monday at noon and Tuesday at 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 51 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-40s. Then tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 6 a.m.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil Sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, February 27th. A fresh start. Forming a new energy company amid pandemic, Wicked Ride. The story was written by Mellon McEwen. Navigating the pandemic last year was an incredible challenge for individuals and businesses alike. But to pull off an oil and gas acquisition in the midst of not only the pandemic, but an oil market crash was even more challenging. Quote, "Doing that was a wicked, wicked ride," said Don Burdick, Chief Executive Officer of Oliphant Energy II. Speaking with Grant Schwartzwelder, President and owner of OTA Compression, OTA Environmental, in Kymark, for Schwartzwelder's Oil Field Strong online webinar, Burdick described the journey he took from forming and selling Oliphant Energy I and forming Oliphant Energy II in a market that was rapidly changing. Quote, "The journey began in June 2017 with the formation of Oliphant," Burdick related. "It was a portfolio company of the private equity company EnCap. By November of that year, the company had spud its first horizontal well in the Delaware Basin's Wolfcamp Shale. When it went to market in February 2019, Oliphant had three producing horizontal Wolfcamp wells with 1,200 barrels of production and a 4,000-acre position. It was sold in October at a price that didn't make anyone happy," he said. He parted ways with EnCap and decided to form Oliphant II as a self-funded entity focused on acquiring producing properties, operating efficiently, and using that business model to return value to equity partners and service debt. In October 2019, when the company started, quote, "We had enough cash to cover base general and administrative costs for a short period of time. We asked ourselves, what is the cost of capital? What's the minimum G&A burn we need to keep the team together? And what kind of equity return does a co-investor need alongside us?" End quote. Using that as a guide to evaluate assets that came on market, Burdick said the company bid and lost out on assets 11 times between October 2019 and April 2020. Finally, in April 2020, the company successfully bid on producing properties in Oklahoma being sold by Ovintiv. "Winning the bid wasn't easy," he said. "As the company was trying to complete the acquisition in March and April, the pandemic took hold and, quote, the world got wicked crazy," end quote. As the deal proceeded, he said the company had to adjust to different financial concerns and saw its equity partner change from a single provider to a group of providers to back to a single partner. The effort also went through four or five debt partners before landing with a local Oklahoma bank. What helped was being flexible and clearly communicating with everyone along the way, he said. Quote, "The lesson learned through this process is clear communication, then dedication, if you will, to flexibility," Burdick said. Continuing the quote, "We communicated with our financial partners that this is where we are, and by the way, we are talking with others in case something bad happens with you. Nothing personal, but we have to have agreements. In the background, we were also working multiple partners to keep our options open and doing that aggressively," end quote. Another challenge was navigating the changing risk appetites of potential partners, as well as the rising uncertainty around the hydrocarbon market. While there may be investor aversion to drilling programs, Burdick said that with oil prices at $60 a barrel and natural gas prices at $3 per MCF, drilling opportunities will emerge, but those opportunities will be approached with caution. Burdick said his team has always been focused on being good environmental stewards, as has Ovintiv, the seller of the assets. In that regard, he said the business model built in plugging costs. Quote, "Our plan takes us to end of life of the well," he said. He said he looks across the oil patch and sees others trying to accomplish similar acquisitions. His advice, quote, "Stay encouraged, stay flexible, work hard, and keep after it. Honestly, there's lots of great talent, and they just need a little bit of good fortune to come their way. Keep your chin up, don't give up," end quote. New report says upstream deals could rise in 2021. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Oil and gas mergers and acquisitions, already undercut by a lack of investor interest in the sector and little industry access to cash, was further impacted in 2020 by the global COVID-19 pandemic and oil market crash. According to Deloitte, upstream deal value and deal count were down 50% and 40%, respectively, compared to 2019. Despite the challenges, deal-making returned to pre-pandemic levels as 2020 drew to a close, dominated by the Permian Basin. Expectations are deals could be on the rise in 2021, Melinda Yee, partner in Deloitte Touche LLP, told the Reporter Telegram by email. But that is contingent on two trends, she added. Quote, "Oil prices and the spread of COVID-19 will be the two biggest factors determining the pace of deal-making in 2021, she wrote. Currently, new cases are declining globally and particularly rapidly in the United States. Oil prices are trading up off the back of the recent winter storm in Texas. While the storm's impacts might fade, West Texas intermediate futures are still trading in the mid-50s to low 60s through the rest of the year. If both those trends hold, we would expect higher, steadier deal flow, maybe below where we were at the end of 2020, but certainly much higher than in the first half of the year, end quote. As in the last half of 2020, Yi said the Permian will remain a key play for deal-making. She noted that the region accounts for more than half of U.S. shale spend and rig count. With almost 70 shale companies producing more than 10,000 barrels of liquids per day, there is plenty of room for consolidation, she said. What the buyers will be looking for is low-cost, contiguous acreage with plenty of running room at the right price. Quote, that is a tall order, and price could be a sticking point, but we have seen several high-profile, low-premium, all-stock deals getting across the finish line. I think we should see consolidation continue through 2021, as cutting costs and growing production within cash flow remain a priority for many companies, end quote. Consolidation was one of four trends the company identified for 2021, with expectations that consolidation will spread beyond the Permian into other basins like the Eagle Ford and Haynesville if prices remain above $50 a barrel. The oil market crash caused by the pandemic has resulted in an industry reset as companies finalize impairments, bankruptcies reduce liabilities, and debt is restructured or discharged, lessening the drag on mergers, possibly returning deal-making to pre-pandemic levels. A third trend is the need for new capital as initial public offerings, follow-on equity issuances, venture capital, private equity, and private investment in public equity has dropped to near zero over the past 5 years. The fourth trend is the energy transition, which is accelerating and expected to expand beyond the upstream sector into the midstream and downstream sectors. Yi wrote that these energy transition will impact mergers and acquisitions in three ways. First, larger companies will continue to invest more heavily in renewables, power and other low-carbon assets, likely reducing their spending on oil and gas, including mergers. Secondly, companies will focus their investments in mergers and acquisitions on lower carbon plays, which stands to benefit the Permian as well as much of the Middle East and potentially some offshore basins. And third, there will likely be an uptick in larger companies exiting higher carbon and more mature assets to reduce their emissions intensity. That could lead to a pickup in the acquisitions and divestiture market. Consolidation and the resulting decline in the number of oil field service companies and exploration companies is not expected to impact the market, Yi wrote. But longer term, she wrote, quote, the question will be about scalability. How fast can service companies increase the number of rigs deployed, fracking horsepower, and boots on the ground? If there are fewer, leaner service companies, we could see a supply crunch if oil prices begin to rise sustainably, end quote. If that happens, she predicted there might be a period of catch-up with the number of drilled, uncompleted wells increased, but service companies and E&P companies will be able to increase their investment to meet rising demand for shale oil. Fort Worth firm looking to contract with truck drivers. Firm has room for 500 truckers in West Texas. The story was written by Miller McEwen. There was a Finnish concept of stoic determination, tenacity, grit, and resilience known as sisu. That is the name Jim Grundy gave the name of his company, Sisu Energy LLC. And he hopes West Texas truck drivers, disheartened by the pandemic and oil gas industry downturn, can find a little Sisu and join his company. Quote, "Folks have lost confidence in the oil and gas market over the last 18 months," he told the reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. "My message is, if you get your boots back on, we're here for you," end quote. The company already has 100 drivers contracted, delivering cargo from dirt to barite to frac sand throughout West Texas. Grundy said he has room for 500 more who stand to make between $11,000 and $13,000 a week. Grundy explained that the drivers would be owner-operators, essentially operating their own business under contract to Sisu. Quote, "We lease the owner-operators to companies," he explained, "listing companies like Halliburton, Schlumberger, Solaris, and NextEra among the companies it leases trucks to. Quote, "We have buying power that makes it easier for the company to work with such large companies than it would be for individuals operating their own trucks," he said. "We hold no assets, so we're not competition. Our job is to ensure drivers make as much money as they can," he said. For drivers contracted to Sisu, the company utilizes smart technologies to optimize loaded miles, eliminate waste, and maximize their dollars. The company handles matters like permits, licenses, and insurance, while the drivers are responsible for maintenance on their trucks. Quote, "We have safety personnel in the field to ensure we hold our fleet accountable," Grundy said. "It just takes one driver to mess things up for everyone," end quote. The company is 100% minority owned, Grundy said, with the accounting, recruiting, and operations departments run by women. The oil and gas industry, quote, "has been punched in the face," end quote, "but it's coming back," Grundy said. "For those who have been impacted, if they can find that Sisu to find inside themselves the ability to get up one more time," he said his company is a great option.
Interest Rates Spiral Higher by Dennis Elam, assistant professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. Quote from Wall Street Journal. Stocks rose Wednesday after Powell's reassurance that there is nothing to worry about. But Thursday's action erased those gains, and stocks are down 355 DJIA points Friday morning. Do markets see inflation in the Team Biden $4 trillion stimulus? Editorial today. We estimate that between 5 and 8 million fewer Americans will be employed over the next 6 months if the $1.9 trillion COVID bill passes. Stephen Moore, Committee to Unleash Prosperity. Moore was correct that the original CARES Act would reduce employment by millions. And when jobs came back, millions went unfilled. So it is worth considering his forecast this time. The bill is so generous that Moore estimates a family of four with two non-working adults in, say, Kansas, could earn the after-tax equivalent of $135,000. Hey, what's on Netflix this afternoon? We have repeatedly warned that the rush to higher rates would eventually mark the end of the bull market in stocks. It will also catch numerous retirees cozy with their REITs and closed-end municipal bond funds in a lurch. There are probably few to no financial advisors working today who were on the scene to witness the 12 to 14% interest rates of long-dated mortgages and treasury bonds. So-called advisors have been lulled by a decade of Fed quantitative easing, along with Bernanke's throwing money from helicopters. There are few other than seniors like myself to warn of the danger to capital in an environment of rising rates. A problem in an accounting text I use has the prime rate at 8.5%. That would be normal. The potential for capital loss in all sorts of fixed income instruments has not been higher in decades. Or as Will Rogers put it, I am not so concerned about the return on my money as the return of my money. The BlackRock Municipal Income Fund pays a 4.9% tax-free yield. It's dropped from $16.20 to $15 this month, is a loss of 7.4%, wiping out a more than a year of dividends. The price of copper is so significant in financial circles, it is referred to as Dr. Copper. Since October, it has risen from $3 to $4.30. That is a whopping 43% increase in 5 months. The Goldman Sachs Commodity Index is up 38% since November. Crude oil has soared from $37.50 in late October to $62.50 today. The price of unleaded gasoline futures has doubled from $1 to $12 in the same time period. I suspect we are still early in the topping process for stocks. This correction could end quickly as early as next week or by mid-March. GameStop, for example, is up over 100% this week. But longer term, we are focused on the seasonal high due in May as a possible end to the stock party that began in 1982. The Economist. The Freeze by M. Ray Perryman, head of the Perryman Group. The recent extreme winter weather is unprecedented in Texas. Records were shattered and the cold lingered for a spell. Most people had to deal with power outages, sometimes for days in freezing temperatures, and millions had no water, again for an extended period. The resulting stress and suffering defies measurement, particularly coming on the heels of a year of COVID-19. It will take some time for a full understanding of the damages and economic cost of the storm, but there is no doubt that it will be massive. We will track and assess information on an ongoing basis. Based on what we know at this point, we estimate the net loss in gross product over time will exceed $100 billion, with personal income losses of $70 billion and hundreds of thousands of lost years of work. The effects will almost certainly exceed those from Hurricanes Harvey and Ike, by far the most expensive weather events in Texas to date. Unlike a hurricane or tornado, the damage and business interruption has touched every corner of the state. All industries are affected, and supply chains have been disrupted. Much of the state business complex came to a standstill, affecting everything from consumer spending to manufacturing, oil production, agriculture, and beyond. The reasons for the power outages are many and complicated. A common practice right now is to oversimplify and place all of the blame on the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT, wind turbines, competitive power markets, failure to adequately winterize, past legislative decisions, natural gas pipelines, you name it. The bottom line is that virtually everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And there's ample blame to share. Texas is a place where summers tend to be long and hot, but winters are shorter and generally mild for many parts of the state. It's natural that our infrastructure is attuned to dealing with the problems we face most often. On a hot day, A typical home might need to be cooled 30 degrees compared to outside to be comfortable, while the recent cold was so extreme that 70 degree or more differentials were common. Needless to say, the demands on the power grid were exceptional. And when brutal conditions took down about 40% of generation capacity, wind turbines and conventional plants alike, disaster struck. Clearly, the primary objective should be learning valuable lessons and avoiding a repeat of what was an extremely disruptive and at times even tragic few days. The solutions will involve improvements in several areas. More on that later. The modifications require careful evaluation, not knee-jerk reactions. Identification and remediation of the underlying issues rather than band-aids on the symptoms is the best way forward. Stay safe.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, February 27th, 2021. Weekend edition. Lesson from the Texas winter storm. More natural gas is needed. The winter storm that rocked Texas last week was a wake-up call for millions of Texans left without power, heat, water, and many of life's essentials for days. Previous winter storms did not bring the sustained cold temperatures that froze much of our energy infrastructure, the defining characteristic that made this storm so devastating. Unfortunately, these recent events, still fresh in the memories of so many Texans, have already turned into a political fight. But when you stop the spin and analyze the data, one thing is clear. Ensuring we have a reliable supply of natural gas is not just a policy preference. It can be a matter of life and death. As the snow, ice, and freezing temperatures moved across Texas, natural gas power generation sharply rose to meet the needs of millions of Texans. On February 7th, Austin's high temperature was 70 degrees with a low of 40 degrees, and natural gas power generation dipped below 7,000 megawatt hours, according to data from the U.S. Energy Information Administration. EIA. 1 week later, as Austin's low temperature approached single digits, energy demand rose dramatically and natural gas generation spiked to nearly 44,000 megawatt hours, a more than 500% increase from a week earlier. The story in Austin was the same statewide. Natural gas was rising to meet demand until the extreme cold overcame our state infrastructure's ability to keep operating. In fact, natural gas met 136% of the increase in demand, far more than any other energy source. So while a handful of pundits are trying to score political points by pointing fingers at natural gas for failing, the data tell a completely different story. Meanwhile, more than one-third of all Texans rely on natural gas as their primary source of home heating. While EIA data reflect the surge in natural gas for electricity, they do not capture the increased demand from those cranking the heat to stay warm with their gas-powered furnaces. When the power went out and gas furnace electric starters could no longer keep home heating systems running, many Texans stayed safe and warm by huddling near gas fireplaces and other appliances they could light themselves. If those examples don't convince the electrify everything crowd that they're on the wrong track, perhaps a pocketbook example will. In 2019, U.S. residential homes used about 5 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. Replacing that amount of natural gas with electricity would cost American families an additional $113.6 billion annually in 2019 dollars, according to EIA data and relying on price averages from that year. To put that in perspective, a home that costs $100 to heat in a winter month with natural gas would cost $339 to heat with electricity. What these data suggest is the need for more, not less, natural gas supply to meet growing and at times unexpected demand. Expanding our pipeline infrastructure can help create the additional resilience we need to ensure we are better prepared for a future extreme weather event. Critics of natural gas and those who promote natural gas bans willfully ignore the facts that it is providing affordable electricity and heat to millions of Americans. Our domestic supplies ensure we are energy secure for generations. It is helping to lower U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. Without question, changes must be made to ensure surges in demand and frozen infrastructure can no longer create a perfect storm that imperils the great people of our state. But policies that seek to curb the production of natural gas or make it more difficult to build the essential infrastructure are sure to put us back in danger when the next storm comes. Generations of Texans before us settled in this land, tackling the challenges that come with living in the beautifully unique environment that comprises the Lone Star State. To ensure we preserve it for future generations, we must also embrace the opportunities that come with living here, and that includes using its bountiful resources, like natural gas, to keep us healthy and safe. Ed Longenecker is the president of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association. Ed Longenecker, Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association.